The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 418 on the podcast today. Ascent Resources, that's AST ticker, CEO Colin Hutchinson and Alan Green talks about smart metering systems and feedback PLC. Do you know what? The psychology in the market is very odd. I chatted to Colin, about a month back, I suppose. And I liked Colin then, and I thought, and I kept looking at the reserve, the gas reserve they had in Slovenia. I thought, that's a cracking reserve there. But I didn't press the trigger. I didn't buy for some reason. Because at the time, there just seemed very little interest in the stock at that time. And now we've had some good news out today. Colin's coming. I've met Colin in the meantime. Really nice guy. And, in person, that is. And it wasn't a date or anything. But I met Colin, liked him a lot, came over very well, very personable. And I've since looked at the story again. And even back then, Colin was saying, listen, there's no problems here with this asset. We need a permit, which is going to happen. There's other routes to market, which can happen as well. Now, there's a third route to market announced today, and also positive news about the permit they need to get this gas and supply it in Slovenia. And the share price has shot up. And you know what I've done? I bought some. I always say, don't buy. It's not a spike. I'm convincing myself it's not a spike. The share is up by 18% today. But this is a 1.5 a million market cap company. And the asset they have is quite large, for that company. And it looks like they'll be producing gas, like Colin says, at the end of this year. So revenue will be coming in. So I've dipped my toe in. I think, in the interest of transparency, I've dipped my toe in here at Ascent Resources. So that interview is coming up with Colin. Don't forget, listen, one day left to get involved in the Vox Markets Oil Price Sweepstake. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. Take your guess there, and you could be winning if you're spot on with the price of Brent crude at midday Friday. Submissions finished by 4:30 Thursday. If you're spot on though with the guess by midday Friday, you win around about $200, depending on where the price of oil is, because we've got a quintuple rollover plus the price next week. So get involved with that, voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast again is Colin Hutchinson, Interim CEO and Finance Director of Ascent Resources, ticker AST. Hi, Colin. Thanks for coming back on.
Hi, Justin. It's great to be back on.
Now, I've got to say, we may hear a bit of noise in the background, and you've just checked in, haven't you, through Belfast City Airport?
I've just made it through security, so hopefully it's a little bit quieter, yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the call. And listen, there's been some good news out today from the company, but let's remind people of what Ascent is all about, where your asset is, and what you do there.
Yes. Ascent, gas exploration production company. We have main asset is in Slovenia, northeastern Slovenia, 456 BCF in the ground. We've got a 75% stake in that, which is probably worth somewhere close to €200 million once you did your discounted cash flow calculations. We've drilled two wells in the past, back in 2011 and again in 2013 they were recompleted. Proved that they flow at a commercial rate, sort of 10 million cubic feet a day from both of them expected. But we've had some delays in bringing that gas to market, mainly due to the fact that we need to build a small processing plant in Slovenia before we can put the gas into the national grid. And to build that plant, we need an environmental permit, an IPPC permit. That has taken us about 2 years. We're on the final stage of that now. And part of the good news that we put out today was that we've received notification from the Court of Appeal, the Administrative Court, that they're going to hear the appeal against the award of the permit in March. Now, we've never really had any concerns that the permit won't be awarded. It's just how long it takes. I think we'd said back before Christmas that we expected to get it sometime in 2016. So the fact that the court has come back and set a date of March to begin their investigation or their review of the appeal gives us quite good reason to be confident that the appeal will be dismissed earlier rather than later. So hopefully we might even get that by the end of Q2, which would be fantastic news, because the IPPC permit is sort of the long-term solution for the field. And lets us put our gas into the national grid in Slovenia, which is definitely the most economic route in the long run.
Yeah, but you've got, like you said, it looks like it's going ahead and it looks like that date's been brought forward. But even if it does happen, you also have two alternatives, don't you?
We do. We've got sort of three horses running at the minute, and we're keen to keep them all running and see which one gets to market first. There are two other routes that are independent of the IPPC permit, so they're both very attractive, obviously, because they're not dependent on any third-party stamp. The first one, which we've talked about in the past, is the methanol plant. The methanol plant is adjacent to our field in Slovenia. And previously, back when the methanol plant was operational, it used to take some gas production from the field. That plant has been mothballed since 2011. The company that owned it went through a bankruptcy-type procedure, and the asset was sold at auction in September of last year to a company called US Methanol. They agreed to buy the plant for, I think it was about 5.7 million euros. They completed on the sale, paid the final tranche of money last week, according to our contacts in Slovenia. And we've had some initial discussions with them. The beauty of the methanol option is they take our gas untreated, and the pipelines already exist to connect our wells to the facility. So once that plant is operational, which, you know, it could take 3 to 6 months, we could be supplying it with gas from our field as soon as we can get our wells reopened and ready to produce. So it's a very attractive option with the infrastructure already being in place.
Yeah, so first and foremost, you've got the IPPC permit, and you can sell gas there. If that doesn't come through as quick as you think, or a delay or something does happen to that, you've got this methanol plant. And so is that efficient selling it to them? Or what's economically, how does that work out?
The attraction of that, of selling it into the methanol, we probably get a slightly lower price, or we definitely get a slightly lower price per cubic meter, and it's probably less economic if you looked at the modelling over 20 or 25 years. But looking at it in the short term, it would allow us to produce gas with a significantly reduced capex requirement. I mean, to put gas into the grid needs the processing facility, needs a metering station, so we're saying that's around 13 million euros. To produce gas into the methanol plant is probably around 3 million euros, so it's much cheaper. It allows us to produce, allows us to see what the wells do over an extended sort of test production phase, and we then make sort of getting further financing once we prove the wells deliver what we say they're going to deliver. We make it much easier to get debt financing for the installation of the production processing facility and for all the other metering stations. So it might significantly reduce the amount of sort of equity money that we needed to put into the project.
Okay, so the third option is
third option is outsourcing the processing. This is something which we started looking into last year. It'll become possible sometime next year once some other infrastructure is completed. We turn our wells on, we turn the joint venture wells on, and send our gas to another processing facility nearby. They would process the gas for us and return it to us. That's also very attractive for similar reasons to the methanol option, in that it's much lower capex, gets us producing gas this year, hopefully by the sort of back end of Q3, and it brings us revenue, brings us data on what the wells do and what the reservoir does. So it's also very attractive. So we sort of got these three horses running. The IPPC route, which is building our own facility, is the long-term solution, and that horse is plodding along. We can see it's getting closer. It's closer to the finish line than we thought it probably was. And we've got these two other options which would allow us to produce gas much more quickly and much more cheaply. And we're pursuing those as well. And my hope would be that we get one of the two short-term options off the ground, and then in the background we continue with the IPPC route, so that we have a processing facility and we have another, whether it's outsourcing the processing or whether it's producing into the methanol plant. So we've got two options running at any point in time.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, the market's welcomed it. Yeah, your stock is up by 18.2% to 0.975 there. There's over 4 million shares traded. So obviously, because essentially, the asset is a cracking asset by the sounds of it. So I want to put this in people's heads. So essentially, when will you hopefully be producing gas, you know, on a conservative basis? Where is it Q4 this year or Q3?
Yeah, we're hoping certainly by Q4 we're in production. If we get a few things going in our favor, it could be earlier than that, but Q4 seems to be would be the target. And it's been a long time coming. People have followed this company, know that it hasn't been the smoothest path, but I don't think anyone's ever doubted that it has the gas in the ground. It's always been kind of get the gas to market, and now we've got three routes, all of which look realistic. I mean, the IPPC permit will come through, and then it's just a logistics exercise to build the plant, and these other two routes both look reasonably attractive for getting gas revenues this year. So it's been a long time coming, but it looks like we could be nearly there.
Yeah, and so what's the life cycle of this, the lifetime cycle of this field, and when it's, you know, at its optimum, what kind of revenue are we looking at?
I mean, in gas terms, the first phase of this project is we'd see us producing around 10 million cubic feet a day, and we'd hope once we get up, once the field's in sort of full production, that should be up to 40 million cubic feet a day. So this first phase is really our proof of concept, proving things deliver, generating some revenue, 1 to 2 million euros a month maybe. And then once we get into full field production, it's obviously significantly increased.
Yeah, well, you can see the upside here, because you are, let's just check now, try to see we are on, you are a market cap of just what, 1.5 million, that's all you are at the moment.
Well, 1.5 million debt, now there's or 1.5 million equity, there is 12.5 million of debt, mainly convertible debt out there as well, so, but it's still, market cap is significantly below where even a modest NPV valuation would be.
Yeah, marvellous. Well, listen, Colin, I think that's given enough people, you know, enough to chew on for the minute, and I'm sure you'll be having some news very soon, hopefully in March, because good news, so come back on, fella.
Perfect. Be great to talk to you again, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand and Communications, Alan Green. You're Al.
Hi, Jess. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, it's odd. We had a few rallies, you know, a little bit of rally. Like I said, from the bottom of when it really sold off, you know, January, start of February kind of thing, with a sort of 10% rally in the FTSE, which is, you know, these aggressive rebounds are, you know, expected in the bear market. And now we're grinding low again. It's like, you know, 1.4% down today on the FTSE, and it's very volatile. But I still hold my belief, you know, that we will see some rallies up to sort of April, and then we'll have the summer sell-off compounded now by the 23rd of June, the date of the referendum vote, which is not helpful at all in a volatile market, is it really?
Well, it's not, but I suppose the one good thing is that we've now got certainty, because prior to that, we didn't know if Cameron would get the deal he wanted, although, frankly, what difference that makes is questionable. But, of course, we've now got that day, 23rd of June, and I think you're right. I think it is a sell for the summer, so my strategy is going to be I've got Shell, BP, AstraZeneca and Imperial Tobacco, all of which have just paid a dividend. So I'm going to take a view on possibly hang on to those until just before Easter, and then maybe jumping out altogether and just sitting on the sidelines. But again, it's the markets are so volatile. You feel that if we start to put a floor in, if the FTSE, for instance, can get back above 6,000 this week and hold 6,000, and it starts to deliver higher lows on a week-on-week basis, then we might have, you know, the basis of a floor onto which we can add further growth. But it's so hard to call at the moment. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, do you have a view on the Brexit? Do you think in or out, or are you not quite sure yet?
I think there's pros and cons both ways. The thing is, you know, Britain, the UK is a strong economy in its own right. But of course, if we decide to leave, then the Scots will almost certainly want their independence vote again, and they will probably opt to stay in. So I think there are cases for and against. I think we're strong enough to stand on our own two feet. The thing is, if the referendum keeps us in, then you know, we then become just part of the federal states of Europe and all that implies, and we have to play our part, you know, rightly so, in looking after the migrant crisis and everything else. And and I think it's I think more bad than good will come out of it for the UK. But I think, you know, we should all remember the UK is a strong burgeoning economy. The rate of recovery may have slowed down a bit, but we still have a great reputation with the rest of the world. And if we do leave Europe, then we are free to forge our own trade deals with the likes of China, US, Russia, and other nations throughout the world. So
yeah,
there's a lot of good that could come of it.
Yeah, I can't think of the stat now, but I think we're still the fastest growing economy in apart from Spain's doing well, it's recovered from a lower base, but in Europe, I think. But one of the stats I heard is that I think what the stay in camp have on their side is the fear of the unknown. You know, people don't know what's going to happen if we come out. But someone said to me, listen, you know, the Germans import to us about 800,000 cars. You know, if they slap a trade, you know, a tariff on us, then the same's going to happen to them, and the French import a lot. And we are, you know, we import more than we export. So, if they're going to play hardball, we can with them. And let's not forget, we are, I think, seventh biggest economy in the world anyway. So it's all about businesses, essentially. And, you know, businesses in Europe do rely on, Britain is a big market for them. So it cuts both ways, isn't it? And I think, you know, they're not going to cut their nose off despite their face. I mean, Angela Merkel is going to have a lot of pressure from the car industry in her country if they put tariffs on us and we do the same back to them. So they're not going to want to hurt their trade with us. So it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's just the fear of the unknown. But I think, you know, at the end of it all, you know, businesses do businesses and they want to do business on good terms. And that's it, you know.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, of course, you've had the Volkswagen crisis too, which has hit their sales, and they are going to want to maintain their sales, whatever the cost. As you say, we're a big importer of their cars, a big net importer of their cars, and the Germans will not want to upset that. And I don't think it's all scaremongering at the moment. It's all brinkmanship. But at the end of the day, I think we are a powerful economy in our own right, and. There probably are arguments for getting out longer term. I'm probably falling down on the side of the outvote for now. So
because let's not, you know, I mean, it is a powerful body, the European Union, but they're not without their problems, you know, and they've got so many different economies on different speeds. And
different cultures, don't forget, too. You're trying to fuse these different cultures together. In the US of A, you've got 52 states, and, of course, you've got Israel as well, which is the 53rd state, but that's another story. In Europe, you've got the federal states of Europe trying to fuse all these different cultures and economies together, and as we can see, the problems are well documented. So I think it's a much harder task to create a federal republic out of those economies than it is to for say the US. So to that end, we're an island. You know, we are a separate entity anyway. So I think we would be stronger alone. There are arguments for and against, and I mean, this is the sort of thing you could discuss over a weekend and still not come to a conclusion at the end of it.
That's it, because essentially listen to us talking a bit of politics, but we're talking about the future, you know, and no one knows what the future holds. But like I said, I think the power of the EU is slowly decreasing. I think we did about 33% of our trade with the EU about 10 years ago, I think, but now it's down to about, it's more than that, and now it's down to about 33%, and they reckon it'll go down to about 25% in about the next 10 years, so it's becoming less powerful, you know, because you've obviously got the emerging economies. Anyway, let's get off stuff we don't know a thing about, and let's get on to stuff we know a little bit more about, I think, and that's individual stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Well, just a couple of things. First of all, I had an interesting perspective on the oil price and the oil crisis from none other than my next door neighbour, who works for an oil services company. And when I had a chat with him yesterday, he was up in Norway. He's off to Malaysia. He's all over the place. But he was saying that there are some issues. Of course, we've got all these rigs coming offline, and a lot of the rigs are sort of fairly elderly, so they're being decommissioned at a huge cost to the oil companies. You've also got, if they decide to bring the rigs back online again, they'll probably have to buy new equipment, so there's a huge capital cost in itself. Plus, he said he's in his mid late 30s, and he's saying that he's one of the youngest in the industry. The oil industry is full of elderly folks, so yeah. Running the rigs, you've got old crews, and in a lot of cases, when the rigs are mothballed, the crew actually retire, so they leave and can't pass on that experience to youngsters coming through. So
yeah, that's a good point, that, isn't it? We all think, because I heard a stat by the UK Oil and Gas Board or something, and regulatory body there, and they said, I think they're talking about the North Sea. They said they need to drill between 30 and 40 exploration wells a year there to sustain, you know, future supply of oil. But at the moment, for this year, they've done between 7 and 12. And that's all they've done. So they're way off, you know, target there. And it's true, we forget that we could lose an industry, you know, or the training of a future industry. And like I said, even that, we all, you know, focus on the rigs and how long it takes to bring in an oil rig or an oil field into production, a couple of years maybe. But we also don't forget that if we're not training people up, because there's no investment going into the industry, it also takes several years to train someone up, even more than that. So the whole thing is going to be, you know, like I said, it's going to flip from being oversupply to undersupply, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. And he said to me, the consensus in the industry is that the oil price will stay pretty well where it is. He believes that we are in the process of bottoming out, that it's more or less found a bottom. But they don't expect any increase in the oil price, given that we've got the glut of Iranian oil coming to the market and Saudi still sort of producing hell for leather. He doesn't believe there'll be any shortage of supply until next year, which is when the oil price will start to go up again. So, so really, the status quo is probably going to be maintained for the rest of the year, which is interesting. You know, having spoken to sort of various people in the city, you know, the consensus in some parts is that at the end of the summer things are going to start to pick up again. But from some of these in the industry, 2017 is when it's going to happen.
I know that the oil price, you know, sort of slumped a little bit yesterday after the comments from the Saudi sort of head there of oil industry, saying that we're not going to freeze production, you know, and I think that's quite a sensible thing, really, because you've got to let market forces. I know it's hard for people in the industry, of course it is, and people are losing their jobs and livelihoods. But essentially, like, if they put a false, you know, cap on production, it would send, you know, it would bring people back into the business, and they would have oversupply again. We've just been in a recurring circle here, and I think to a certain extent. And he said, you know, basically all producers around the world have to get more efficient and bring their costs down. As simple as that. And if they can't do that, then that's a natural evolution of the industry. That's what happens, you know. And it's quite a good. I think we get a lot of almost is self fulfilling. I'm hearing a lot of noise now. I was saying, second half of this year, we'll break out of the $35 trading range, or the ceiling we've seen oil price hit quite a few times, and it'll break out of that and go higher. And you almost think maybe it will, because so many people are saying it, you know. So let's what are you looking at stock-wise?
Okay, just a quick mention of Feedback PLC, FDBK. We've spoken about Feedback a few times. Of course, the Feedback have the proprietary TexRad technology, which is textual analysis, and they've got joint ventures with Prostate Checker, Stone Checker, that's kidney stones, multiple JVs all over the world with major hospitals, with Siemens in Korea, and many other places. They announced their interims early this week. The losses were down slightly. The turnover was pretty well on par with the previous year, but The chairman of the board said that the future of the company is hugely promising. Clearly, it's great. It is jammed tomorrow with that company. But with the shares down at 1.5p, we're still with a market cap of about £2.5-3 million. So, you know, there's no upside really factored into the price at all at the moment. So,
yeah.
So feedback again. You know, I think we can expect some more news from that company as the year goes forward. The other company I wanted to talk about was one we've spoken about before, Justin, called Smart Metering Systems.
Yeah.
Epicode SMS.
Okay, before I drag you onto that, just look at the feedback chart, and they're almost down at the support levels where they spiked up last time. So I think it's worth, on a technical level, just keeping an eye on those, you know, because at this level, like, they don't hang around there for long. They almost seem to spike up from this level. So, you know, technically, it'd be interesting to see if they do that again, because, you know, you can get in there at a good level right now, but obviously do your own research. Sorry, onto SMS. Really.
Smart Metering Systems. Again, we've spoken about this company beforehand. The company provides end-to-end metering services for the electricity, gas, and water industry, and they provide an overall data management service for the industry too. They're well invested into the domestic smart meter market, which is the fastest growing segment of the energy market at present. And in at the end of January, they updated on trading in the run up to the full year results, which will be published in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. They said 2015 was their 20th year of trading. They'd seen growth across all segments of the business, 5 new agreements in the domestic smart meter market, which I mentioned just now, and the results are expected in line with previous guidance. Chief Exec Alan Foy said the company had a great year, was confident in the outlook for 2016. But what's interesting on the chart for this particular company, it's been pretty well steady at around the sort of 340, 360 level through the year. But on the release of that statement at the end of January, the shares spiked up as high as £4.35 and have slowly drifted back down to £3.60 in the run-up to the results. Mm. So the fact that they've tested those highs indicates to me that provided the company keeps on delivering delivering results and trading in line with expectations, we could well see a return to those levels.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's a heck of a spike. Look at the date there. In fact, the 19th of January, it literally gapped up the next day. And it was down at 337, and it shot up almost to 440 in the next couple of trading sessions, and it's come back a bit. But, when you see spikes in chart, there's always good news behind that. And why you should never buy into a spike unless you're a good trader, and there are very few of those around. Yeah. It's almost like when a company does that, it's worth reading the news and then putting it on a watch list and seeing where, you know, wait for it to come back to a nice consolidated support level, you know?
Well, I think was, given the track record of smart metering over the past few years and the consistent performance from a charting standpoint too, the fact that we suddenly went up and tested these highs indicates that there's value at that level, given that the company carries on trading. So it would be reasonable to assume that the next bit of good news out from the company will see the shares return close to or up to that level. So arguably, where we are now could be a good entry point. I haven't looked at the averages on the chart. Just maybe you've got something that you're looking at there that you can sort of that will give you better indications.
Yeah,
on that.
Well, I was looking at a weekly chart here, and like I said, those highs they hit, just before, when was this, in start of February, was also the highs they hit back in, what date was that? In 2012. So, it's almost like a bounce, but they've come back now. Like I said, they're midway up between that, and I said it's worth looking. Let me look at a daily chart here, because I'm just scrolling out. Yeah, it's almost a gap there. They're nearly at the gap there at 353, 365 at the moment. There's a gap. No, we're gapped up. And so you'd assume that gap would provide a bit of support. And that's also where the 50-day moving averages. So that both those little levels there at 350, 355 may provide some support, you know? It's always on a technical level there. So cool. Sure. Worth putting on a watch list, I think, and see what happens there. Marvellous, Al. Thanks very much, fella. Smart SMS. Cool. Thanks, Al.
SMS. Cheers, Jess. Thanks a lot.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, only one day left to get involved in this week's All Prize Sweepstake. So get there before 4:30 on Thursday for your chance to win $200. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.